To stream and yay, there we go. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm very, very good. Yes, it's a pleasure talking with you, and thank you for saying yes. I'm probably a couple of years behind you in my helping others, so to find you on LinkedIn was a real pleasure to read your story and, you know, the effects of, you know, what we, how we've both used what we've been through to help others.
Thank you, that's very sweet. It's always lovely to see victim survivors putting their experience to good use, and, you know, it takes a lot to work with other victim survivors. I think it can be quite re-traumatizing and re-triggering at times. So, you know, it's a very brave thing to take on.
Oh, I remember being in a backpackers, and it was probably one of the lowest points in getting my AVO in place and all of that, knowing that I was going through this to help others. I just had an intuitive feeling that that's what I was meant to do.
I think that's basically how I felt when I left, is like, you know, I might as well use this experience for good because I've dealt with enough of it.
Yeah, and there has to be a balance. Like the name of your foundation I was just looking up means balance.
Which unity is, and harmony. Yes. Some people used to ask me, like, and I could, if I'm having a funny day, I'm like, it's Hawaiian, it means. I did find it myself, but I just can't tell you right now because my brain's having a blank.
Yeah. Yeah, I sort of thought, that's a really unusual name. Why would you name it that? And when I looked up the meaning of it, I went, that makes complete sense now.
Yeah, it's really nice, isn't it? I studied Greek mythology at school. And I studied classical civilization. So I was really looking for, you know, like a Greek or Roman goddess or something to call it. But the only kind of really powerful, strong goddess is Athena. And she's the goddess of war. And I was like, we've been through enough war. So we can't, you know, we can't call it Athena. And then I just searched and searched and searched. And then finally I found the name Lakai. And I was like, oh, that's great. Because what I found when I was going through DV, and then especially when I was trying to set up Lakai, was organizations did not collaborate. They didn't want to. They didn't speak to each other. They didn't work together. They didn't support each other. And if you don't work with all those agencies, you cannot provide the support that your clients need.
Yep. Yeah, I've found that very tricky in trying to get, you know, even a foot in the door in the sector. And I've just gone, you know what, it's time for a new version of that, you know. So I'm interviewing you today, and then Ashton Wood from DV Safe Phones on Monday. You know, I think we're the new wave of helping people, because what I saw in I went to the women's centre in my town and did their course, and I'm going, yeah, okay, that's explaining a lot of what people are going through and what you need to do legally and everything, but where's the empowerment? Where's the how do I stop this from ever happening again? And I couldn't find anything. So in my own healing journey, I actually wrote my own program. And your program touches on a cornerstone of what my whole program's about, and one of the few programs out there that actually really get into the nitty-gritty of empowering you and believing in yourself and loving yourself enough that you will see those people a mile off and you just go, this isn't happening again. You know, I was talking to
a woman. We've got to break that kind of thought process that DV perpetrators are attracted to weak women, you know, and that I was having that conversation with a friend of mine the other night, and I've known him for a long time, probably 10 years. And he was saying, oh, but, you know, why did you stay? And, you know, why didn't you just leave him? And, you know, was it because you were in such a bad place when you met him? And I was like, no, I was in a bad place and I met him. I was in a really good place. That's why I was attracted to him. They love strong, independent women. We're much more of a challenge to try and control and destroy. And victims come in all shapes and sizes. Some of them do have mental health issues when they get into those relationships. Some of them are not in a great place and they fall into that trap. But some of them are not. Some of them are intelligent and empowered, and they still get caught up because of that coercive control. So we've got to break that thought process and stereotyping that we're just all these meek and mild women that just do what we're told from the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Where are you based, Tyler?
I'm in Wollongong, south of Sydney.
Oh, okay. So, great.
Yeah, so I'm mainly online at the moment, mainly because I started all of this like at the beginning of COVID, but I'm, you know, 4 weeks off launching my program because I'm a life coach. So, you know, it's, I looked into doing the whole foundation thing and found it a bit tricky, and I had to sort of sign up for the whole, to get the core of the foundation, you know, running. So I went, I'll get back to that. You know, I'll come back to that. I know that there's, like, I represent the LGBTQI plus community because when I escaped, there was not one person that wanted to talk about it, even online. They didn't even want to know about it. And I just kept on hammering because it's once you start talking about it, people, I don't have a black eye. I remember thinking that I don't have a black eye. So, you know, but it's so much multi-layered and multifaceted and complex issue just in your own story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Have you spoken to DV New South Wales about what you're doing?
No, I haven't. No. But yeah, it's trying to get them to answer an email or something or a phone call or, you know, you've always got the gatekeepers and all of that. And I thought once I get a bit more.
Not talk if to you're a friends few... with me, you don't.
Pardon?
Not if you're friends with me, you don't.
Oh, okay.
I'll introduce you to the right people.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Rachel. Much appreciated. So how did you, like, I read on your website that the case manager, I didn't have any of that. I ended up telling Housing New South Wales to go fuck themselves, excuse my language.
Had a similar experience where I refused to leave Housing New South Wales unless they found me somewhere to live. So
yeah, they like, you've got $350 in your bank account. You can pay for, you know, your accommodation. I said, and what am I supposed to live on? Like, I found that so demoralising. And I thought, this is going to change. Are
probably one of the most abusive services you'll ever deal with.
Oh, okay, right. And I thought, well, Stuffy, as being the stubborn Irish woman that's deep inside me, I went, I'll do it on my own. And so I did, you know. I just lived in a backpackers. I cleaned the place for free rent, and that's how I got through the whole court case. I know that on your website you said that having a case manager made such a huge difference, and that was the cornerstone of why you started. It made such a difference in your journey that's kind of the cornerstone of your foundation. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I set up the foundation because I wanted everyone to have a caseworker just like mine. And I'm still friends with her now.
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it?
She's one person that, you know, I would trust with my life. And, you know, when everything's going wrong, even now, you know, you have dark days and things go wrong and, you know, you're going to family court or something else has happened, or, you know, I can pick up the phone and call her because she's always been there for me and she knows the whole story. So I got referred to her from WDVCAS, the Women's Domestic Violence Court Advocacy Service. Yeah. So police attended our house. They contacted WDVCAS, and it was actually prior to me leaving. There'd been an incident a few months before. So I'd called police, but not to attend when he was there, to tell them this is what's going on, but I'm not ready to make a statement yet, but I just want to talk to you so you know. And of course they knew anyway. It wasn't the first time they'd been to our house, but they were really good. And instead of saying you've got to make a statement, they just let me kind of talk it through. Not talk about the actual incident, because then they've got to take out the AVO, but they made the referral to WDVCAS. They then referred me to a local domestic violence support service. And that's where I was assigned my caseworker. So I went and secretly met with her before I'd left him and filled in all the intake forms. And then she basically just sat back and waited. And I said, I'm almost ready. I'm almost ready to leave, but not quite yet. And then the final incident happened, and police were called for that to attend. I made a full statement. They took out an ABO and he was charged and later convicted with assault occasioning actual bodily harm. And then it was the Easter long weekend, so I had to wait until the Tuesday, and I was straight on the phone to her, and from then she got me through that first 6 weeks, that tough time, because everything went wrong. You know, we had 5 different homes in 7 weeks. We applied for Start Safely and through Housing New South Wales, and he told Housing that I had money hidden in England. So then that got put on hold while they investigated. He put the children on the family law watch list the night before we were due to fly to England for a holiday that we'd booked months and months before when we were still together. My double prams, expensive double pram, snapped in two on the train from the city to Cronulla while we were going to look at an apartment. My friends hired a car for me for a week that got towed away from outside the motel we were staying in. Everything went wrong, and that's, you know, that's what happens. The whole world is falling apart, and you know, it's just crumbling beneath you,
and they do whatever they possibly can to stymie you leaving or make you seem like you're the abuser and not the other way around.
Exactly. And that you're crazy, and they try and fuck you over. You know, they will do everything they can because they've lost the ability to physically abuse you or emotionally abuse you if you won't take the calls, verbally abuse you. So they've got to try and get that coercive control in somehow. They've got to keep hurting you.
Yeah.
I actually
moved back with my elderly parents. I got choked with my T-shirt in foster, and then when I escaped, it was in the entrance. And it's like one of the most beautiful parts of Australia. I think it was just glorious there. And I ended up going to the police station. Well, when I escaped, I had to run from Long Jetty to the entrance, which is was about half an hour or so, and took my car that I'd paid off. I paid the insurance too. And I must say, UEU insurance were just amazing. I had the AVO in place and everything, but with the AVO, I ended up making a statement and, you know, are you scared of him? And I was terrified at the time. Like, I was that classic freeze. You know, after you get assaulted physically, you're a strong, independent woman, and then all of a sudden someone's doing that to you, and it's like far out. I mean, that's after months and months and months of being screamed at for 10 hours a day and all that hoo-ha that they do. But I had people loan me money so I could actually drive to Foster and actually be there, and I was terrified that they would show up. Because there was no safe room. And when I said that to someone, oh, yes, there is. I said, it's a locked office up the other end of the courthouse. I said, it's not a safe room for women. I said, it's not safe at all. And the second time I went up there, I said to the police officer, because I got a summons, I said, I'm not going without you. I just wasn't prepared to show up there with the, you know, the ex being there. I was going to be too vulnerable, and I just wasn't prepared to do that to myself anymore. And he said, no, I'll be there. And in the end, the ex was trying to, you know, do the whole cycle. And I'd already started to heal, and I could see his own cycle, that nothing had ever changed. And I found that fascinating on a site, not that I'm a psychologist, but psychologically I found that fascinating. I thought, you haven't learned anything, and here am I, I've already started to heal, and I can see your cycle right here now. And in the end, the cop went up to him and he said, I will charge you with a breach of the AVO if you do not leave her alone. And he deliberately sat across the aisle, you know, 2 aisles away, looking at me just so he could do that. And I found that's the reason I wouldn't go without the cop, because they have the authority to do that, you know. And I just sat next to him the whole time. It was like, yeah. Yeah.
You need that support person with you, you know, and that's why I felt like, you know, there were times when it would have been easier to go back to him because I felt like I could manage the behavior when I was with him. And of course, that's not true. You can't manage it. No. If you could manage it, you would never get hit. You would never get abused in any way, emotionally, financially. But at least you know what's coming. Whereas you don't feel like you know what's coming when you're not with them because you don't know what they're planning next. And, you know, she was the one that reminded me why I'd left, where I was moving to in my life and why I needed to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And that she had my back the whole time. And then, you know, when I had finally got into our new rental place and started to settle in, I just felt like, you know, that statistic that says we leave on average 7 times before we leave for good. Well, what if you left and you had that support right from the beginning?
Yeah.
You know, you might go back, but the second time you might leave for good because you know you've got that consistent person.
Yeah.
What if those women that end up not leaving and getting murdered, what if they knew that support was out there? Maybe women in those situations would leave sooner if they knew someone was going to help them access all the services, access food, access housing, you know. So I just thought this is the way that we can make a huge difference. And not only that, but that we need to support women for as long as they need. And what I found around here was that the services that did provide caseworkers, of which there weren't a huge amount, but they offered support for, you know, 6 to 12 months, and that was it. And it's purely a funding issue. It's not because they don't want to help women for longer. But, you know, 12 months, that could be enough for some women, but it's not for all. Not if they have severe mental health issues, not if they're going through family court, not if they're going through criminal court, which, you know, at the moment we're going from a, you know, AVO first mention to the date of a final hearing could be 18 months apart. You know, we need to make sure that we're supporting women long-term. And also that when I moved from the eastern suburbs to Cronulla, she was no longer officially allowed to support me because I wasn't in her area.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to somebody else now. I trust you. You know my story. I don't want to be re-traumatized telling it to somebody else. I'm going to leave out details because I'm living in trauma. You know, I need to have the same person. And so we provide support for as long as they need, but also if they move, we will still support them and we'll try and link them in with a local service as well, but knowing that they can still talk to us and have appointments with us whenever they want.
Yeah, and that's and together with that, you know, because I know everybody in the sector is pushing for extra funding, there needs to be another knock-on effect of, you know, these people getting incarcerated as is due. Like because there was no bruises on my neck, my assault got dropped, you know, and it's just like it's clear that this person, but there's no evidence. So, you know, I was lucky to get the AVO. Which they breached 3 times on social media, but I just reported them. It took the cops about 8 months to find them, and then they got arrested, and then they sort of started their own thing with the cops because he assaulted the cops. So that's kind of going to be their deal, you know. Well, now the cops really know what you're like.
Exactly.
You know? And I found the whole court system very demoralising. On numerous levels. You know, I had to walk away from everything and surrender my dog and, you know, and the shame attached to everything. But looking back now, I'm going, but the shame of the behaviour is actually on them. It's not on the survivor at all.
No.
You know, even though people. Yeah. Even though, you know, my father asked me the same thing, you know, why did you get mixed up with someone like that? And I said, Dad, one thing you've got to realise is they wear a mask. I call it the Jekyll and Hyde because they out in the community that they're like, oh, you would never guess. And that's what I call it. I call it Jekyll and Hyde. They make out that they're, you know, society's cornerstone of goodness, but at home they're monsters, absolutely. Monsters. You know, they make out that they're the saviour of everyone in the community, and then when you get home, it's all hell breaks loose, you know, and you know, I used to say to him, because he was a trans guy, used to say, you know, don't mistake me for a meek and mild woman, because that's the last thing I am, you know, I am not that. And in some ways, when you're dealing with someone like that, they actually turn it around and use it against you. They're reasonably clever in one way, but then in another way, they're quite stupid.
Yeah.
They can get around the law, but they're not smart enough to go, this isn't working for me. You know, I need to change. Like, there has no self-awareness at all.
No, there's no accountability from them.
No, not at all. It's all on you. And I was talking to a survivor this morning, and I think you probably got more of an experience than mine. My children weren't involved in the abusive ex where I lost everything. So she had a child involved, and her ex is constantly in contact, and they have shared custody. How did you navigate through, you know, your twins were like two when you left? And so was it a constant struggle for the next 14 years to get any kind of level of peace?
So my boys are 9 and a half now. They have every other weekend and half of school holidays with their dad. He was on supervised visits for a while after we left through the family court. And then it got to a stage where I felt like the best thing for the boys was to take him off supervised visits, because they were about to turn four and, you know, they're going to start asking questions about why they only see their father once a month and why it's always with somebody who's got a notepad following them around. It's not a natural way. And he had not been abusive to them in any way. But certainly it's been a very rocky road. And, you know, we've been in family court for 7 years. I mean, you know, it's a constant battle. And the one thing that I can guarantee is that nobody ever comes out of family court feeling satisfied that the children are 100% protected, or very few. I shouldn't say nobody. I'm sure there are few and far between occasions, but,
yeah,
you know, the family court's there to protect the children, and that is not what they do.
Oh, okay.
You know, and ICLs, the independent children's lawyers, don't have enough experience in domestic and family violence to recognise what it looks like in all of its forms, and that when somebody keeps taking you back to family court, that is emotional and systematic abuse. So, you know, it's tough, but, you know, I guess we all cling on to the fact that our children are eventually going to be able to choose for themselves. And, you know, we kind of have the...
Does your ex-husband actually project onto you, and that's why, do you think that's why you've been in family court for 7 years? Because he's having, it's like you got away from me, you're the one that got away, or what's your idea around that?
Look, I'll be honest, I think for him, it's not necessarily that I'm the one that got away. It's that I'm the one who keeps talking about it.
Right.
So, you know, there have been others that have managed to get away, but they've just gone away from him. So the AVOs have never been made final. Yeah. You know, that we found out through family court, I think there'd been four previous AVOs. None of them had ever been made final.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm the one who pushed it through. I'm the one who turned up in court when he got convicted as the police's witness. You know, I'm the one that holds him to account when he doesn't want to be held to account. And I'm the one who keeps telling my story in magazines and on TV and running the foundation. And, you know, so that hasn't helped. But, you know, I feel like I don't do it to punish him. I do it to help other women and children in that situation. I've got zero desire to have any contact with him. I don't care whether he likes it or not. He shouldn't have behaved that way. And I'm taking a stand for all those other victim survivors out there, some of whom are still in those relationships and don't know how to get out, or don't feel confident to do that because they don't think that they can move on with their lives. And to show them that they can leave and move forward. And it might not be an easy path, but you can do it.
Yeah, it's easy is not a word I would associate with that at all. And a lot of people, like the survivor I was talking to this morning, said, you know, I feel broken. I said, look, the way I look at it from where I am now, I said, it's not that you're broken. I said, you just need healing. But in order to heal, you need a safe space, which means your living environment needs to be safe, and you need to believe in yourself enough to go, this is possible, you know, which she's struggling with because the ex has shared custody. And that's, you know, something that I understand where she's coming from, not from my own experience, but just from my own empathy. You know,
it's really hard. And it's hard when you see that another parent isn't doing the right thing by the kids, or, you know, or they come home and their behavior is disgusting for, you know, 5 days afterwards. And then you've only got 2 days before they go off again. And, you know, and it's really hard to deal with. It takes its toll. But I think, you know, you've just got to draw strength from internally and going, well, at least I don't have to wake up with it every day. And, you know, I'm doing the best I can to protect my children, but there's only so much I can do. There are limitations to that when the family court order that they have to spend time with the perpetrator. Yeah. And so, you know, that's why we have to do such good self-care. It's why we've got to have counselling. It's why we've got to have whatever works for us in our self-care routines. It's why we've got to have supportive friends or caseworkers or whoever it may be. But I think one thing that victim survivors often fail to understand is that healing is a journey. It doesn't end. You don't get to a point where you're healed. I'm 7.5 years out. I still have counselling every month. I still speak to my caseworker when I need to. Sometimes it's nothing to do with DV, but, you know, and I still have those self-care things in place. If something is re-triggered, and, you know, that doesn't happen to me often now, but if it does and I need to have a doona day, I take the doona day because you need to have that self-awareness so that you don't damage other people.
And that's one thing in my group, I'm doing a free online self-care workshop, because that's the one thing I have found that we don't know how to do that. And it's really, I believe it's the cornerstone of your healing, because it's the one thing you can, even if you, like you said, you know, you're re-triggered or re-traumatized through the court or whatever, withdraw and go, okay, even if you're hard up for money, what are the self-care things that I can do that help me recalibrate and revitalize my mind, my body and my spirit. And for me, like, I only live 10 minutes from the beach, so I went there all the time. I'd ground myself, and that's why I call myself the barefoot warrior, in that I've overcome that and I'm now helping others. But I used to ground myself on the sand, and everything would just leave me, and the waves would wash the anxiety or whatever I was going through. And I just felt so calm, and I met such beautiful people at the beach, you know. And I've actually said to my sister, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's the beach or the indoor pool. So have you ever noticed people around water smile a lot?
I was just going to say the same thing. For so many people, water makes a difference. You know, a walk by the beach, or I know my partner now, often he'll go when he's got calls to make for work, rather than sitting in the home office and doing them, he'll drive down to the beach, and he's just sitting in the car, but he's watching the water. It's a very calming thing. You know, you've got to work out what your self-care is, and people still think self-care is a bubble bath. And look, there's nothing wrong with having a nice, hot, relaxing bath.
That's a
small part of self-care.
But it's also journaling. It's also getting counselling. It's also knowing when I need to ask for help.
Exactly.
Shit, I can't do this on my own. It's knowing that you need to vent. Or for me, like, I went through a couple of winters of withdrawal from the ocean. I'm still building myself up to doing the iceberg thing, but I haven't bothered, you know. But I'm getting a veggie garden ready. So that's my, and I just love it. I'd rather garden barefoot, but, you know, in winter when it's been raining like it has, it's not quite viable.
Well, no, unless you want to bring all the mud in the house.
Yes, well, that's right. And my now fiance would not be very happy about that. So, you know, yes. So what do you think the sector, or what do you think's missing from the sector at this point in time? I mean, you talked earlier about a lack of collaboration, but is there anything else that, you know, that you can sort of touch on?
I think there's two things that we're missing in this sector to support victim survivors. I think one is the long-term case management, so long-term support and recovery. Crisis support is really important. Having a safe place to go is really, really important. But unless we support victim survivors long-term, they don't move forward with their lives. You know, often we see, in our case, women stuck in that victim mentality. Yeah. And because they're stuck in that mentality, they become entitled. And that's not healthy for anybody. We need to be looking at how we empower them to move forward. And it doesn't mean for everybody going back to work or going to work. For some, you know, they're never going to be capable of that. But it's looking at what options are available to them, you know, training, TAFE, education, whatever that might be. And hopefully for most it will be employment, because if we're living off government benefits and living in housing, no shame in that. You know, everybody has to live their own lives, but for some that's not where they want to be, and being in that situation is very disempowering for them. Yeah. So I think that's one huge focus. We have to fund case management services and look at how we empower women to move forward, or how we empower victim survivors to move forward. Sorry. And the other part that's really missing is legal support in terms of pro bono. So yes, there are legal services, so you can go and see a duty solicitor if you are in criminal court, but who do you go and see if you're in family court and you're not eligible for legal aid? There's no one. So we have so many victim survivors that fall between that crack of, they have enough assets that they're not entitled to legal aid, but not enough that they can afford a lawyer. Yeah. So the money that they earn literally is enough to pay their rent and food for themselves and their children. There's nothing left to pay a family lawyer. So what do they do? There's no pro bono legal assistance. If you're lucky, you might get someone that's willing to talk to you for 20 minutes, half an hour. That's it. That doesn't help you to know what's going on. It doesn't help you to write an affidavit. It doesn't help you when you need to be represented in court. And the family courts are not kind on people that are self-represented. And they also know that there's more and more people self-represented now than ever before. Why is that? Why are we not looking at that as a problem? The family courts don't want to deal with people that are self-repped. It's very time consuming.
But even in that, like I was watching Ashton Wood from DV Safe Phones. He did a piece in Queensland on, must have been morning TV, and he was saying in 2020 when he started this, he said the rise of domestic violence in New South Wales shot up at 75%. So, you know, like, can we logically think about that? And while, you know, the court might not look kindly on it, they need to have a bit of compassion. Not that the courts do, the courts are what they are, but there needs to be a look into the fact that that's risen and people are falling through that crack that you talk about. Absolutely. And it needs to be addressed, and people are over things not being addressed. I think we've been through a lot in the last 2.5 years, and that's probably tipped a lot of people over the edge of what they see, you know, the people in government, you know, going, oh, just pushing it to the side. People are over it getting pushed to the side because, you know, victims are dying. You know, they leave, and that 6 to 9 months after they leave, that's when a lot of survivors end up getting murdered. You know, absolutely, you're at most risk.
And look, we get federal funding, and I had a conversation with the previous minister for DV before the federal government change. And, you know, we're very grateful for the funding we receive. We wouldn't be here without that. But it's not enough. And We have a 6 to 8 week waiting list. This week I've had to say no to 2 referrals because we just don't even have space on our waiting list, because otherwise we're just, you know, asking women to wait longer. Now, if you're asking women to wait 6 to 8 weeks and we know that they're most likely to be murdered in the time post leaving that relationship, we're effectively saying to them, could you just wait and not get yourself murdered until we can get you a caseworker?
That's right.
Yeah. That is totally, totally unacceptable.
Yeah, it is.
So,
and that's what we need to start saying to these ministers that are saying, oh, yeah, you can, you know, when I looked into the submission in January for the sector, or I think it was federally, it was $1 billion. And I thought, you divide that into all the states and territories and then all the organisations in that state, that's nothing. You might as well give us 20 cents. You know, that's ridiculous. It's not enough. And if that's all you're prepared to do, then you need to also, like I've said, look at the legal system and start getting the penalty needs to be a bit more for, you know, like the cops when mine breached the AVL, oh, because it's social media, it'll just be a slap on the wrist. Well, maybe it needs to not be like that, you know.
Exactly.
But then, I mean, I suppose there's going to be abusers that actually fester on that and make them worse, but a lot of them it might actually curb their ways too, you know.
If it makes them worse, the idea is that they're protected.
Yes, that's right, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's really good to, you know, talk about it from someone who knows on both levels.
And thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate your invitation.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I just want to, you know, get it out there that, you know, even if they take from our strength of moving forward and the desire and the drive and the passion to help others, you know, I'm realising now just how unique the two of us are in our stories to actually need to help others, you know. Like you said, with your story, you know, there were 4 cases where the AVO wasn't put in place because she probably didn't have the strength. It's just easier if I don't.
Yeah. And, of course, you never know about that. Until that got subpoenaed in family court, I would never have known.
Yeah. You know, and then, but you've made him accountable, and that was my thing. I'm going to make you accountable for your behaviour. You will not get away with this. You know, that was my, you know.
Makes us unpopular, Kylie.
Yeah, I was at a point where I didn't care. I thought you can do your worst. And there was triggering points, and I was terrified, but I was also very determined, you know. We don't talk about the terrified side of it, but I was a lot of the time. But, you know, I wasn't. Someone also said to me, you know, that they have no right to be in your head anymore, and that's what drove me to work on my mindset. Absolutely. And what was going through my mind of, you know, oh, you're a loser and all of that negative stuff, to replace that with positive and go, well, hang on, I am strong.
And we try and educate our clients as well, you know, especially when you're going through criminal court or family court. It's very hard. You just keep getting dragged through and saying, you need to make a choice. Do you want to be the victim or do you want to be the survivor?
Yeah.
Because if you want to be the survivor, you have to stop him from controlling you, and you're allowing him to continue that control because of these court proceedings. These court proceedings aren't going away in the next 2 months. Yeah. But you have a choice to take your power back and be that survivor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember being outside the court and staring at him and going, you know, it was a big fuck you. You know, you're not going to control me. And I had my headphones on and I just walked straight past him, and I was like, then at another point, I think it was 4 weeks later, I just wanted to choke him from behind. But I thought, no, don't do that. But that's how, you know, I read a quote the other day about the anger that comes up, and I really resonated with it because I wanted to deal with my anger in a really healthy way, because I had a very angry father. So I have a very volatile relationship with anger and people that display it. And they said that the quote was, the anger that rises up is angry because the person deep inside, you know that how you were treated was wrong.
Absolutely.
And you know that you deserve to be treated better, and that's what the anger is there for. It's showing you that you know you deserve better.
A big part of it as well is that we know we shouldn't have tolerated it.
Yeah.
We've got that self-anger because, we know we should have left sooner. We know we shouldn't have put up with that. And it's about finding peace and saying, you know, I can't change that now. No. Yes, I shouldn't have done that. What was I thinking? But that is done and that needs to be left in the past. All I can do now is focus on who I am now and where I'm moving to.
Yeah. I also turned it into a bit of a spiritual lesson. Well, there were obviously lessons that I needed to learn. And I left when I left so that I could relate to those that have the same story. That's how I chose to look at it. And, yeah, I look back and go, could have left then, oh, it would have been so easy. And, no, but I didn't, you know, and like you said, you can't wind it back and change it. It is what it is, you know. And the beauty of my story is 3.5 years down the track, you know, I'm engaged to a beautiful woman and we've just bought a house together. And now I never thought that I would ever pay off another house ever, you know, because I came out at 41 after 4 kids. And so my kids were like in their 20s when my DV, the bad one, happened. You know, I look back and there were quite a few abusive girlfriends and I went, oh, wow. You know, and when I did my DV course at the Women's Centre, I realised that I'd grown up in it. And, you know, that was a very dark day for me, you know, and my eldest child had admitted to me that their father had actually been physically abusive to them. So it was I didn't want to be here that day. I didn't want to be alive anymore after that. But that was probably my darkest day of that realisation of far out. I've had 50 years of this shit. And it's time to change that, because I think like your foundation's name, it means balance, and that's what life. And if I've had the worst of life, the next 50 years is going to be the best of life.
Yeah, well, and congratulations. I mean, what a great success story. You know, I think it goes to show we can move on.
We can.
No matter what's happened, we can find happiness again. Sometimes that's with somebody, sometimes it's not. But, you know, you found success emotionally.
Absolutely.
Physically and financially, you know, you're empowered and you've moved on. That's such a great success story.
And so determined to help other survivors do the same thing. I found that you have to be committed to that choice that you talked about. Yeah. You've got to be committed because every day it's a choice.
Absolutely.
And like you said, there's days where you have that Juna day. It's the days where you get up at 6 and you're back in bed at 9:30. And there are days where your mind, your soul and your spirit are saying, I need to rest.
Exactly. And you have to learn to do it. You have to do them, because otherwise you go out there and you damage other people.
Yeah. And I found that I don't cope with things. When what's going on? Oh, I haven't been to the beach. Like, that's in summer. Like, I'm so grateful to live in Australia where I can go swimming from September all the way through to May. I'm just so grateful. And to have a garden where I can put my hands in the earth and just, you know, ground myself and watch something blossom. You can take our journey of us, you know, we're like a seed that's been, you know, a seed isn't anything until you put it in the ground and you put it in the dark, and then it turns itself inside out and turns it into, you know, say it's a sunflower. You know, sunflowers are one of the most beautiful flowers.
They are.
And they follow the sun and they're just happy and swaying, you know. And the bees love them, and I just get so much joy when I look at a sunflower. You know, but that's essentially our journey in life, is the seed, and then it turns itself inside out in the dark. Exactly. It comes alive in the dark and it looks for the light. And that's what our healing journey is, very, very similar, you know, and it's choosing to go through the dark of the healing, because that's what it's not, you know, singing cross-legged humming and meditating, it's going through all the hard shit and facing your own demons a lot of the time too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, facing that, well, I need to look at myself and why I'm attracting this kind of person, because I didn't like what happened to me and I'm determined for that never to happen again, you know. And I when you talk about I was on New Start, and it was like, no, I had to take all my evidence to Centrelink and go, you know, look, I'm not ready to go back to work, and I work in disability. And there's so much help with the NDIS. They were going, no, you got to go back to work. And I found myself angry at this person for getting so much help. And I thought, you're not ready. So I had to go back to Centrelink. I had to go through all of that process of proving that I wasn't ready to work. Not that I was on much, but it's then it come, you know, I was home for about 11 months, and then I went, oh, I still don't think I was ready, but I went because I couldn't stand Centrelink being on my back. I just couldn't handle it. And I thought, look, it's just easier if I go back to work. And I had to move through a lot of triggering moments through that too. You know, and it was just every step of the way where there's been a trigger, I'm now at a point going, well, there's something I've got to work on. It's not something to run away from. It's something that I now have learned to lean into in whatever trigger it is, you know. And that's where the growth happens, you know. I refuse to let this control me anymore. Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Send me your email address, Kylie, and then we'll touch base via email and work out who we can introduce you to.
Okay, awesome. That'd be great. Thanks, Rachel.
No worries. Take care. Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, lovely to meet you too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.